but that's the old.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Hope we can make your Saturday even just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in pop culture and entertainment. And joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
We got a lot to talk about this week.
We do.
CinemaCon coming over the last few days. And before we get started, I want to give a shout-out to listener Adam Wood. I appreciate you reaching out via Instagram to let us know you were checking out a couple of the episodes, and we hope that you continue to enjoy the show. And I'm also real excited about going and checking out Civil War, which, Julio, you were able to do over the last couple of days. You got a quick hot take on Civil War you want to share with the listeners before we jump in?
Yeah, don't focus too much on the title or that this movie being about a second American Civil War, because that's kind of really just the backdrop for the story that's going on here. This is really a movie about wartime journalism, which as a recovering ex-journalist myself, I really enjoyed it on that level. Great performances, especially by Kirsten Dunst, who right now, if I had to choose, and that's with 8 months still to go in the year, right now, if I had to give my Oscar out for Best Actress today, it goes to Kirsten Dunst.
She's that kind of good in her, huh?
Yeah, and then the supporting actress would be, and I'm going to mess up her name, but it's the same actress who just played Priscilla Presley in Sofia Coppola's Priscilla. Yeah, and her name
is that the same actress that played in Willow, the series that we watched a couple months back?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I'm just looking up her name so I don't get it wrong, because it's Kaylee Spaney. That's it.
Okay.
And I'm hoping I'm pronouncing her last name correctly, but she's also phenomenal. And it's great performances all around, but the two of them really are the anchor of the movie. And, Phenomenal flick.
Okay. I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of Alex Garland, who's the filmmaker here. Really big fan of his films Ex Machina and Annihilation. Disappointed with his most recent film before this, Men. I did not care for it. But this one,
I don't care for Men, so I actually skipped that one.
Yeah. but this one, I really feel like is up there with his best work. And, of course, Alex Garland also was the writer of 28 Days Later, which which is getting apparently a set of sequels coming up. Some news that's come out recently where we already had 28 Weeks Later that came out a while back. And now we're going to get, I think it's 28 Years Later.
Sure, I would have to, or maybe 28 months and then 28 years?
Yeah, well, apparently it sounds like they're going to do three movies. And Danny Boyle's coming back to direct the first one. Danny Boyle, also one of my favorite directors. So Garland and Boyle working together again, very excited about that.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy, who starred in the first one, is going to be a producer on this one as well. So, that's exciting. But there was some buzz this weekend that they're talking to Nia DaCosta about directing the second one.
Cool.
And I'd be down with
Candyman.
That too. Candyman and the Marvels. I think she's a great director. I think the Marvels kind of got unfairly maligned. I think it's a good flick. You know, I'd be looking forward to seeing what she could do with the property as well. So, glad to be back on the Alex Garland train after being a little bit worried about it getting derailed after Men.
Choo-choo!
That's
the train noise for those of you folks at home.
This is a good flick. So that's the bar we're at for the rest of the year now, is you got to top Civil War for me if you're going to be, right now, granted, we're 4 months in, there's not a lot of greatness in the beginning of the year typically.
Omen?
Right now, I haven't seen First Omen, but right now this is my best picture of 2024.
I don't know that I'm putting it in the best picture category, and I know we're going to switch gears here in a second, but it's a really cool movie. The director, who I don't even know what their name is, but they've decided to make it in the style of a movie that would have actually been a prequel to the original Omen. It's got like real late 60s vibes.
Nice.
Looks like it's shot on film. I highly recommend it. It's really wild that this is like the year of the satanic nun revival movies. But anyways, I also know that Star Trek Discovery is going on, and you're a big fan of that series.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Star Trek fan in general, but I have enjoyed Discovery. I know that Discovery has had mixed reactions amongst the fan base over the course of its run. This is going to be its final season. I always felt like the series has kind of been unfairly maligned, and I do think it took a little time to find its way, and I think that it got a lot stronger when it moved from being a prequel series to the original Star Trek to being in the far distant future of the Star Trek universe. This is now the farthest in the future we've seen a regular series in the Star Trek universe, because at the end of the second season, they jumped way ahead of everything else we've ever seen. So they're in the, I want to say the 30th century now, whereas like the previous Star Trek series,
to what?
23rd, 24th, and 25th centuries. Like,
oh, okay. Like yeah, huge jump.
Next generation DS9 Voyager take place end of 24th, beginning of 25th century. The recent Picard series has been right at the beginning of the 25th century. This has got some years on that. So they actually, I think it's the 32nd century, if I'm remembering correctly.
Wow.
Yeah. So, strong comeback. And interestingly enough, like the main plot that we're following through this season is following up on a classic Next Generation episode that they never have gone back and touched again, which was really interesting because it was a really thought provoking episode called The Chase. And in this episode, Picard kind of goes on this archaeological quest that's bequeathed on him by his archaeological mentor. Picard was kind of an amateur archaeologist in addition to being a starship captain, and discovered that basically all the reason most of the races we see in Star Trek are humanoid is because all of these different planets were seeded with this similar DNA by these aliens that basically, for lack of a better term, are the creators of intelligent life in the Star Trek universe.
Oh, interesting.
And so, you know, they basically determined that the humans, Vulcans, Romulans, Cardassians, Klingons, etc., they all have similar DNA. And that's why you can also see them crossbreeding in various characters. You know, you get characters like Spock, who's half human, half Vulcan, or B'Elanna Torres, who's half human, half Klingon. You've got, there's other characters. In fact, the current president of the Federation in Star Trek Discovery has descendants who are both human, Cardassian, and Romulan, if I'm remembering correctly. She's got a mix in there.
The Cardassians are in this show.
We haven't seen all the Cardassians, not the Kardashians.
My bad.
No. That's been a joke that's been running around for a while, though.
Well, I just discovered it on my own, so yeah, thank you very much for noticing.
Yeah, no worries. But yeah, so it's been interesting to see them following up on this. And this season is a little more high adventure than some of the past seasons of Discovery have been. And
okay.
I'm really enjoying it. It looks like every bit of money you could possibly put into this show is there on the screen. I mean, this looks like a big screen adventure, and I'm just enjoying it. I've really come to love these characters. They're continuing to do interesting things with these characters. I'm going to be sorry to series go. I am sorry that some certain segments of Trek fandom have not supported it as well as I think they should have, as well as I think they have other series. And I think the future of Trek and, you know, Strange New Worlds has a great following. We've got Lower Decks. We've got Prodigy going into season two. There's still the Starfleet Academy series that they're talking about that's going to be in the same time period. So I don't think we're going to completely abandon Discovery. But sorry to see it end. And sorry to see that we've got to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, we've got CinemaCon has been going on this week. This is a big convention, for lack of a better term, but not like a convention that we would think of like PensaCon or something like that. That's a fan convention. This is a convention where it's in the true sense of like a trade show. The studios come to get exhibitors hyped about their upcoming films and their releases. And there's a lot of news that comes out of this. They release information about upcoming movies. Sometimes they show pieces of upcoming movies or sometimes even show complete films. And so a lot of word starts to come out of there about new projects being announced or information about projects that we know are coming up, getting previews and things like that. There's been a lot of news out of CinemaCon this week, and I wanted to just touch on some of it. And I, weirdly enough, like one of the things I think I'm most excited about is one of the things that if you told me about it without telling me who was involved with it, I would probably have been like, really? Okay. But that is that we're getting a remake of The Running Man. Now, big fan of the original movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Richard Dawson, based, of course, on
Jesse Ventura in it.
Yeah, Jesse Ventura, based on a Stephen King story that was one of the Richard Bachman books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Stephen King was writing under the Richard Bachman pseudonym. But, you know, kind of a story that was a little bit prescient in that it kind of predicted the rise of reality TV. And, you know, so maybe even a story that's a little bit more timely now than it was in the 80s when the original film came out. But having to do with, I think convicted criminals, if I'm remembering correctly, being put into this like death race kind of situation.
They take criminals and they take the poor and they put them in a life or death battle similar to the Hunger Games.
Yeah, except there's a little bit more of a human
element. Editorial. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the genius moves of the original movie was the casting of Richard Dawson, who was an actual game show host, as the host of the show. You know, Richard Dawson, of course, was the original host of Family Feud. But before that had been an actor, so he's somebody with some chops. You know, he'd been on Hogan's Heroes, been in a number of films, things like that. So somebody that had some acting chops, but also was known as a game show host, coming in and playing this game show host character. So we're getting a remake of this, which is like, you know, yeah, okay, remakes, whatever, you know, people get tired of remakes. I think if you have a fresh approach and the right creative team, a remake can be fine. I'm good with that. This is going to star one of the it boys of the moment, Glenn Powell, who of course, we saw in Top Gun Maverick. We saw in the movie, the rom-com with Sydney Sweeney late last year. Was it Anyone But You?
Is that
the name of it? Yeah. That ended up being this huge hit that nobody really expected. I don't know why, because I think if you put Sydney Sweeney in a bathing suit, a lot of people are going to show up. But, you know.
Yeah, poster gave me a boner.
Well, you know, that's between you and, you know, whatever.
Me and God. Sorry about that.
Yeah. But at any rate, you know, he's kind of an it actor in the moment. They're announcing him for a lot of projects. So it's like, all right, makes sense. Glenn Powell, whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, all right, fine. Then you say the magic words, and I become a lot more interested in this film. Magic
words.
No, magic words in this case are directed and produced by Edgar Wright.
That is wild, because to your point, it sounds like we're digging deep into the value bin of Stephen King adaptations to go and remake, and then you put Edgar Wright's name in it, and it just totally changes the perception, right?
Yeah, I mean, Edgar Wright is just absolutely one of my favorite filmmakers, we're going to have a little bit of an in-depth discussion about one reason why Edgar Wright's one of my favorite filmmakers in a couple of weeks on the show. We've got a special show planned where we're going to talk about the use of music in movies. And Edgar Wright is just so good at that. Director of Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Last Night in Soho, Baby Driver, mm-hmm. just has not made a bad movie.
Every one of those, what a banger.
His documentary on the band Sparks, the Sparks Brothers, also a great film. And totally different filmmaking discipline than, you know, what we might be used to him for. The guy is just a fantastic director, visually, sonically. I can't wait to see what he does with this.
Yeah, no, agreed 100%. And it's not as if this Running Man original Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle in the 80s is some sacred cow that should never be touched. In fact, when it comes to adaptation, which is another conversation we'll probably be having on a show in a couple weeks, just what an adaptation is, the Running Man isn't really close to the Richard Bachman story. There are definitely similarities, but if they go more in the direction of the book, it'll be a very different film.
Yeah, which they very well may be. We don't know too much yet about this other than who's involved in the project. So, yeah, it could be one of those things where they go back to the book. And I think that there's a lot of times that they've done that where that does make for a strong movie that is at least as strong, if not stronger, than the first take at the film. And the other example outside of that is True Grit.
Oh, great example.
Yeah, I mean, the Coen brothers went back to the original book and made a film that was more faithful to the original book. And, you know, made one of the best films of that year. They walked away with something like 10 Oscar nominations. Unfortunately, didn't win any, which it should have in my book. But, it was also happened to be a very competitive year that year as well. But, you know, you can do this and you can do this well. And there's nothing wrong with it when you do it well.
No, I got all the confidence in it. That's one of the CinemaCon stories. How about we do like a rapid fire round where you just hit me with a couple of the other ones. We'll give like a one sentence take on it and pass it off to the audience to see what they think about them.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think the one that probably is going to be the most familiar ground for a lot of our listeners who are like the same kinds of stuff we do. We got Kevin Feige came out, talked up, hey, you know, basically kind of said, we know we've kind of screwed up a little bit. We're back on track.
Did he really?
Not in those words, but, you know, kind of like wanted to reassure the exhibitors, hey, we hear you.
That
kind of thing. But came out and showed apparently 9 minutes of Deadpool and Wolverine. And
what did the audience think?
And 4 minutes of Captain America New World Order, which isn't going to come out for another year yet. The audience apparently really liked him. I watched a pretty good in-depth discussion of it on Screen Crush on YouTube. And it sounds like, you know, what they're saying is this is a Deadpool movie. It is in no way Disney-fied. It is absolutely in the same vein that the originals were, but straight up in getting into the Marvel Universe. A lot of the stuff you might have inferred from the trailer is going to lead somewhere. Okay. And we do get to see Hugh Jackman in the classic Wolverine costume that we've never seen him in, the one from the comics. So that's exciting. Just sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. I think a lot of people are banking on this movie being one that they're very excited about, and it sounds like that excitement is well placed. So great stuff from the Captain America New World Order as well, with Harrison Ford coming in to take over the role of now President Ross, had been Thunderbolt Ross in the previous movies, the role that had been played by William Hurt, who, of course, sadly passed away. And just some great stuff from Anthony Mackie. And apparently the plot line has to do with Ross approaching him to reform the Avengers.
Oh, interesting. So, okay.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that. That I think is probably the biggest, most mainstream news out of CinemaCon. Another piece that came out of CinemaCon that I thought was interesting. Finally getting confirmation. Not that this is a huge surprise, that we are going to get a Transformers G.I. Joe crossover movie.
And is that exciting to you, or are you just kind of like, great. Neither of those franchises have been very good historically.
We've had one good Transformers movie, that being Bumblebee.
Dark of the Moon.
No, that being Bumblebee.
Oh, excuse me. That's right.
If you're following a through line here, I like Haley Steinfeld.
I'm picking up on that.
I think I've made that clear before. But no, Bumblebee was actually, independently of Haley Steinfeld, is actually a really good movie. None of the other Transformers movies have been any good. And I will grant you, I did not see the first two G.I. Joe movies.
Snake Eyes good?
I did see Snake Eyes. No, it's not good.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so I don't have the greatest confidence in this franchise. But
negative makes a positive.
Well, I mean, we'll see. You know, I'm fine with that. Go ahead, make your little movie. We'll see what happens.
make your little $500 million movie.
Yeah. I just hope that Michael Bay stays far, far away from it. That's my biggest hope. I mean, just to hit some of the other notes that we know about, we've got Blumhouse reviving the Blair Witch Project. Heard that one before. We'll see.
Yeah.
We've got some footage dropped from the John Wick spinoff Ballerina.
Ana de Armas is phenomenal, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and Keanu's in the clip. This is a prequel to John Wick 4, so
okay.
They haven't brought him back from the dead yet that we know of yet. But come on, that's gonna happen. I feel like I accidentally willed this into being, but a new scary movie is in the works.
Yeah, I'm blaming you for this.
Yeah, I blame myself too. But but what can you do? We've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, we've got some monster news. Now, I don't know that this came out of CinemaCon or if it just came out simultaneously with CinemaCon, but of course, we have the latest MonsterVerse movie, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, in theaters
which
now.
Julio and I were both massive fans of and think it should actually be up for quite a few Academy Awards this year.
Not so much. But we do enjoy the MonsterVerse in general, and we got some news this week that the MonsterVerse is going to continue. And this is continuing in a way that I'm a little bit more excited about than I am about the idea of there being another one of these theatrical movies. We had the series Monarch Legacy of Monsters on Apple TV Plus, which we talked about in detail as the series ran. We got confirmation we are getting a second season of that show.
Confirmation come along with the return of the Russells, or do we not know yet?
It sounded like they are coming back.
That's the vibe I got as well. So let's hope for that because, man, they were both just incredible in it.
Yeah, Kurt Russell and Wyatt Russell playing the same character in different time periods. That was definitely one of the hooks of the series. And the idea that we'd have both of them back is definitely something that's appealing. Although I am kind of wondering how they're going to make that device work. It made sense in season one, but where we ended up at the end of season one, I don't know if it makes sense to continue that device.
Well, let's pick up a conversation that we were having when you and I were discussing Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire. What a terrible title. You had mentioned that the movie didn't really tie directly into the series. And in fact, from one MonsterVerse movie to the next, referring to these legendary movies, starting with 2014's Godzilla all the way through to this most recent one, there's not a whole lot of real tight continuity between them. Do you think we'll continue to see that in this new season, or do you think it'll at least be directly tied into the previous season?
I think it'll be directly tied into the previous season, because I think where we left things at the end of last season was basically a cliffhanger. So
yeah, that's sure.
So I do think they'll follow up on that. I think we'll have internal cohesion with this series continuing. I really would like to see this whole universe tied together better, especially if we're going to now see spinoff series, which they say we are.
So in addition to season two of Monarch Legacy of Monsters, terrible title, we're also getting some other spinoff series. Did they actually elaborate on what those might be or look like?
No, but I can pretty much say that they will probably also have terrible titles.
Yeah, that at least seems to be cohesive from one to the next. Do you remember the end of King of the Monsters?
Vaguely. I remember that the movie ended at some point.
It does, yeah. Before the credits, which we all know happen at the very end, all of the kaiju in the world basically come out of their hiding in the hollow earth and bow down to Godzilla. And that plot thread was completely abandoned. And it just seems like from one to the next, there is very little cohesion. And if we continue down that road, the reason why I bring that up is because maybe there's a way to reconfigure the timeline in some way that would at least work so that we can get the Wyatt Russell and the Kurt Russell multiple timeline things working and not completely contradicting what we saw before.
Perhaps. I don't know. I mean, the more I think on this franchise, just doesn't bear a whole lot of critical thinking.
No. To be fair, I thought that Monarch Legacy of Monsters did a significantly better job than the majority of the theatrical releases.
Oh, I did too. And that's why I'm excited about the idea of the series coming back. I just want to see some of that. If you're going to have a mythology, let's have a mythology. And let's have that mythology cross over to the films as well, and not just be like this background thing that's on a series on a streaming network that frankly is probably like the sixth or seventh biggest streaming network.
Yeah, it needs another big hit after Ted Lasso's not with it anymore. But in our wildest imaginations, I guess the safe bet would be that we'd get a Kong tangentially related spinoff. But is there another kaiju or monster that you would like to see get a Monarch style spinoff?
I mean, the character that we, in as much as the kaiju are characters, the character that I think we spend the least time with in these movies, that is the character that I always want to see more of, is Mothra.
Oh, great call. Yeah, man, great call. And there does seem to be some deeper mythology connected to that. I feel like King Ghidorah is the Thanos of the Godzilla Toho movies anyways. So to find a way to bring Ghidorah back into the fold would also be cool, because he's an alien kaiju. So there could be something fun there.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, Mothra is one of the only characters, one of the only kaiju that has anchored her own movies.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I do think that there's a lot of potential there with Mothra. And, if they do that, maybe that is also an excuse to tie back into the mythos in a stronger way, because now they've established that you know, Kaylee Hoddle's character, Gia, basically has kind of taken the place of the two twins that were like the psychic connection to Mothra in the original Mothra film. So maybe it's an excuse to bring her back and Rebecca Hall back and, you know, have a stronger tie to the movie series. I don't know. We'll see. We don't know what they're going to do there, but we do know at the very least we're getting a second season of Monarch. We're getting some kind of spinoffs. I got to imagine, given how well Godzilla X Kong is doing in theaters, that we're going to get another big screen MonsterVerse movie as well at some point in the,
oh, absolutely,
in the relatively near future. I just, I love the kaiju. I would love to see more in the vein of Godzilla Minus Zero. And I think we'll get a sequel to Minus Zero as well. And I'm okay with those being off in their own world. I'm okay with there being multiple Godzilla universes.
Minus Zero is actually the prequel to Minus One, if I'm not mistaken.
but we'll see. I just feel like I don't want to say what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Say it.
Like, the MonsterVerse is kind of just like, it's better than the Transformers movies, but it's not a lot better.
No, but if they took the characters from the series that you and I are talking about and enjoyed, and they put them in with the kaijus, we might actually be cooking.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that every one of the MonsterVerse movies is stronger than every one of the Transformers universe movies, except for maybe Bumblebee. I might put Bumblebee.
To varying degrees, I agree.
Yeah. I think that overall it's a stronger franchise, but I do think it is still very much a turn your brain off and just enjoy kind of franchise. There's nothing wrong with that. And I do enjoy the movies for what they are. I do think the big screen spectacle is great. You're not going to take away from the, you know, the 8-year-old kid in me, the big monsters fighting each other.
That's right.
You know, I'm going to be good with that forever. But I would like a little more meat on the bones. I would like there to at least be some internal cohesiveness to the universe and to have some stories that continue. And it's not so much about the, I mean, some of it is about the humans at this point. You know, that's what I think Monarch has done such a good job of, that the movies haven't done, is showing the impact on the humans. And showing, you know, this organization and what this world is, and the world building is in Monarch. And why aren't we seeing the results of that world building in the films?
I agree.
That's maybe my biggest problem with this franchise right now. And yeah, I kind of hate to sound so negative about it, but because I mean, I'm going to be there for the next one.
I still contend 2014 is a hell of a movie. The rest of them, I co-sign everything you said. And when you say turn your brain off, it just immediately puts a bad taste in a person's mouth. That said, it's pretty awesome to see Godzilla going against other monsters.
Well, and that being said, you know, Monarch is more the most direct sequel we've had to 2014.
Absolutely.
So that may be where it succeeds, where some of these other things may be financially successful, but maybe aren't as creatively successful.
Yeah, agreed.
So, I don't know. It remains to be seen, but you know, I'm here for it. I'm going to check it out for sure. We'll see what happens. We got to come take a break. Back with more in just a moment. Listen, Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Happy nation, living in a happy nation. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, it is time to catch up on, if the time period of that song wasn't a clue enough for you, time to catch up on X-Men 97.
I don't know about you, but that song is hitting for me, man, especially before the lyrics or the vocals start. But maybe it worked better in context to the scene in the episode itself, which is another opportunity to say that here in a couple weeks, you and I are going to be discussing the use of like needle drops and pop songs in movies. So, yeah, I dig it, man. I don't think you're a huge Ace of Base fan, but did you like it in the context of the show?
I mean, it fit in the context of the show and the time period of the show of where the show is set. So I think in that regard, it really worked. I think also that song has been seen by some as like an LGBTQ anthem. And okay. Given that the X-Men are sometimes seen as a metaphor for the LGBTQ community, I think it works on that level too. But I'm going to have a hard time separating its use in this episode, this most recent episode of X-Men 97, from what happens immediately afterwards.
Dude, this episode was awesome. So it's been a couple weeks since we talked about X-Men. Let's go ahead and jump into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's catch up a little bit because we ended up after two episodes with Storm having left the X-Men, having lost her powers, and a clone of, or determining that there's been a clone made of Jean Grey. There's two Jean Greys running around. And
we circle back around to this? That's one big question mark for me, but we'll forge ahead, pun intended, and then we'll come back to that.
Okay. So we've had kind of the fallout from that. We've had the Storm exploring her loss of powers and what she's going to do with herself. We've had Jubilee celebrating her 18th birthday, which was a fun little like mini episode, for lack of a better term.
Throw back to the arcade era of the X-Men beat-em-ups, which was super fun.
Yeah. And now we have this episode where now, you know, after Magneto's impassioned speech before the United Nations and being acquitted in front of the World Court, and Genosha, this nation that's been kind of a haven for mutants, is now being admitted into the United Nations.
And the happy nation.
And that's where we pick up in this new episode. We've got this nation that's become a haven for mutants, and there are some issues, but overall it seems kind of idyllic, and there's kind of a ruling council, and they've approached Magneto about being the leader of the country.
Yeah.
And so Magneto and Rogue and Gambit are visiting Genosha in order to, you know, have these discussions with, and we see a lot of very familiar characters in here that we've either seen in the comics or in the original series or both.
Nightcrawler comes back, which is awesome.
Nightcrawler, Banshee, Emma Frost, Sebastian Shaw, Moira McTaggart. We get to see a lot of these characters. Nightcrawler is my favorite X-Man. So anytime you've got a Nightcrawler in a story, I'm there for it. But we have this going on while at the same time a news crew has come into Xavier's mansion to do a story about, you know, mutants. They're just like us, basically.
Have this like budding romance between Rogue and Magneto, which is obviously messing with Gambit. And it seems like Magneto decides that if he's going to rule Genosha, that he needs an empathetic queen with him to really earn over the favor of the people, which also is kind of reinforcing this budding romance and causing, crazy jealousy from Gambit. So like that's kind of a big part of the emotional crux of this episode.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, so we've had this love triangle that's been building over the past few episodes that really kind of comes to a head here, where Magneto approaches Rogue with this, and it's not so much that she loves him versus loving Gambit. She loves Gambit, but this would be a good thing for mutants as a whole. And she's kind of like
looking at the political machinations that you would get in something like Game of Thrones.
Right. And she's looking at putting the needs of the many over the needs of herself. And Gambit understands that and doesn't love it, but gets it. And it's like, you know,
yep.
kind of is willing to back off. And then we have this big display where there's this big gala, and Magneto and Rogue kind of announce themselves in front of everybody, and they're dancing to this song floating above the crowd and everybody looking up at them. And it looks like that's where we're going. And then Rogue realizes, no, I can't do this. I love Gambit. And tells Eric, but never gets a chance to tell Gambit that before tragedy strikes. In more ways
than one of my favorite characters comes running in from obviously the future or something. Cable makes an appearance. And I don't really have a real firm grasp on the storyline of what's happening, but it looks as if this massive Sentinel kaiju type thing comes through a portal from the future and starts kind of laying waste to Genosha.
I don't think it necessarily came from the future. I think Cable knew it was coming and tried to warn. Of course, we didn't mention that Madeline Pryor is in Genosha as well and is taking a leadership role in Genosha. And Madeline Pryor, of course, is Cable's mother. So he comes back to warn her and then gets sucked back into the future. And we have this.
During this op-ed thing that you had mentioned a minute ago, Cyclops kind of reveals a little bit of his hostility towards humanity and storms off, which was also a kind of cool scene and a side of Cyclops that we've never seen before. But that's moving backwards and not forward. So
yeah.
Where are we at?
Well, it's good that you mentioned that, because I think that B-plot kind of gets lost a little bit in the drama of what happens in the A-plot. And I think the B-plot here is going to prove to be just as important.
Yeah,
because I think the after effects of what happened in this episode are going to be an earthquake on the rest of the series.
Yes.
And I do think it has to do with possibly changing the outlook of some of these characters, and Cyclops in particular, between what has happened to mutants as a whole and what has happened to him personally and his tragedy. And the strain that this is putting between him and Jean, and this, where he's having kind of mental conversations with Madeline on the side, and that whole, the classic love triangle of Jean and Scott and Wolverine is still coming into play. And now it's kind of a quadrangle with Madeline being thrown in there too.
All the soapy stuff in this X-Men 97 has ended up being super juicy and good.
But that's always been a part of the X-Men, and that's part of what makes the X-Men so great. And it really works, and that's why what happens here hits so hard. And it's also hard to look at what this means for mutant kind overall when you're so busy feeling for Rogue and what happens in this episode. We probably should have put a spoiler warning up earlier. But let's go ahead and put the spoiler warning up now, because we're going to get in this last couple minutes into the nitty gritty. We have this massive Tri-Sentinel attack on Genosha, and Genosha is just devastated. It's just big parts of Genosha are leveled. We may have seen several characters die here. Several characters
seemingly lots.
Yeah, I mean, Banshee might be gone, Callisto might be gone, Moira MacTaggert might be gone. A number of these major characters may have just been wiped off the board. But above and beyond that, we may have seen two characters who appear in the opening credits of this show wiped off the board here in this episode. And
that is who?
One is a little bit more questionable than the other, but the second one does seem like it's a pretty definite death. In the course of fighting these Sentinels, Magneto takes it upon himself to protect the Morlocks and to forcibly restrain Rogue and Gambit from diving in front of them.
God, I love Magneto in this show.
And he and the Morlocks apparently get annihilated by the Sentinels. So we have Magneto apparently killed, and we have Rogue and Gambit still trying to put off this thing, and Rogue saving Gambit from the last minute Gambit saving Rogue at the last minute from kind of a suicide attack on the Sentinels and going after them himself and basically getting impaled.
And such a great sacrifice scene, because of the way he's able to use other mutants' power to kind of like energize his own kinetic blasts or whatever. I don't know exactly what the lore is, but he goes after the Tri-Sentinel, uses the Tri-Sentinel's own powers against it and destroys it, but not before, like you said, being sacrificed, being impaled by a piece of steel that the Tri-Sentinel has on it. So, like,
it just goes out with this line the name's Gambit, remember it.
So good. And so good. And this is definitely the Red Wedding of X-Men episodes so far, because, like you said, so many tragic deaths in this episode, so many, like, pivotal X-Men characters that I have to guess, and I mean, it's not a wild guess to think, but we're going to have to get a reset of the clock with Cable being introduced and his whole time travel thing along with Bishop. There's no way this is lies, right?
Well, it remains to be seen, but we'll find out in the future, and we've got to go for now. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.